The Secrets of Star Wars is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Hello there. Obi-Wan Kenobi here, also known as James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Obi-Wan,
Jedi Master Plo Koon,
and many other characters in the world of Star Wars. You're listening to... Shh, don't tell. It's the Secrets of Star Wars. May the Force be with you.
Hello there.
It's a power that Jedi have that lets them control people and make things float.
Impressive. Every word in that sense was wrong.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
That's not how the Force works.
Force is with me, and I am with the Force, and I fear nothing.
Remember... The Force will be with you, always.
Hi, I'm Ryan Napsiger, and you're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars, where we talk about everything connected to that galaxy far, far away. From movies to books to TV shows and more, we're looking at the deeper themes and meanings found in Star Wars. Before we begin, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Secrets of Star Wars, including Matthew M., Gerard B., Nathaniel S., Lucas W., and Peter P. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue the Secrets of Star Wars and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. All right, today we're discussing The Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 5, titled The Return. Joining me today on the panel is John Coral. Hello, John.
Hello.
And I'm sorry to do this live, but did I get your name right? Your last name specifically?
Yes, you did. Perfect.
Very good. I should have done that prior to recording this. Also joining me today is Catherine Lafferty. How are you doing, Catherine?
I'm doing good.
Good. Alrighty. So I'll do my handy dandy episode summary here before we get into the more important things, such as the broader themes and deeper meanings behind the episode, behind today's episode. All right. After returning to Pabu to regroup, Omega reconnects and relaxes with her brothers while Crosshair struggles with both Clone Force 99 and himself. With the unexpected return of Echo, seeking information on the location of Tantus, the Batch returned to Barton 4 to unlock the Imperial datapad Omega took from Nala Se. After overcoming an ice worm, and yes, you are watching Star Wars and not Dune 2, so keep that in mind. Crosshair and Hunter manage to make peace, and the squad patches things up in true Batch form. So... Before we dive in to some of the fun discussion items, what was your guys' first impressions / overall thoughts about today's episode?
Well, I really liked the episode. It was great seeing all of them working again together. And then after seeing how the last episode ended, to see how they try to work through the issues. So I just thought... It was neat seeing going back to that ice planet one more time. But overall, I mean, it was a pretty nice episode.
It fulfilled my expectations for sure. I got to see Wrecker digging with Batcher. That was fun.
Yes.
And then just the reunion, I thought was really well done.
Yes, I agree. My brain short-circuited because when you said digging with Batcher, I just for some reason thought of Wrecker using Batcher to dig, which does not make any sense. I love this episode. I thought one thing that I have been appreciative of this season of Bad Batch so far is that instead of filler episodes, they're actually doing development episodes, which is not the same thing as just transporting characters through timelines and action sequences just to get to a certain plot point. It's actually, you know, showing some interesting character interactions and that sort of thing, which is one of my favorite things about season three so far. It's like the last season of Clone Wars in that way. You know, we're in on it. We're getting to the meat and potatoes of everything. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
And we, with episode five, I've just marked the third way through point of our 15 episode Bad Batch run. What have your guys' like overall impressions of the season been so far at this point?
Oh, it's hitting everything I needed it to. We're getting, you know, full redemption. We're getting some story closure. There's still the mystery of that dang left hand, but we'll find that out, I hope.
Yes. Yeah, that's something I've been thinking about a lot, too. How about you, John?
Oh, I mean, I like the pace of the shows overall, too, and stuff. I mean, it's really gets moving, even on the slower episodes. They pack a lot into it. And I do like the softer Crosshair. He's kind of like taking over the role of Tech in a sense, because, you know, he's a by the book kind of guy like Tech was. And whereas Tech kind of laid the foundation of her training, he's kind of like a higher level teacher of, okay, now I'll let you go ahead and figure, you know, lead the way in a sense, you know, and then he supports her, which is very good. So I like seeing that side of Crosshair. But the thing is, though, there's since it's the third season, there's always something lingering in the back of my mind, like, okay, this is all good. This is all pleasant and happy overall so far. But, you know, what's the bad stuff that's going to happen? Or, you know, where are the things that are, you know, going to happen that as this storyline resolves? Is it going to be bittersweet? Is it going to be happy? Is it going to be sad? You know?
Yeah.
So as you see all this stuff, there's always just in the back of my mind, especially when Hunter says certain things like, our job isn't done yet and things like that. It's like, what entails his job being done, you know?
yeah, for sure. Especially since, like, with Batch, it's so unique. We know it's the last season. We also know that, hey, we're in the interim between, you know, A New Hope, when there are no clones left in the whole Empire. And we also know that, like, we don't see any of the Batch in Rebels, and we don't see them anywhere else really in Star Wars after this. So are we going to see, you know,
except for
some
Bagan on the streets? Don't forget the one in Kenobi.
Yes, no, that's true. Kenobi's the Kenobi cameo scene is real. But we've never seen Batch show up anywhere else, which is like, what's going to happen to them? Do you guys think that Omega's going to show up after Batch closes out in some form?
I hope so.
Yeah,
me too.
I don't know. It's yeah. I mean, I would love to see her in a live action or some other kind of episode, but I'm not sure if they'll bring her back or not. Or her story will end with this.
Yeah, I hope they do more things with Omega. I think she's been a really fun character to come out of Batch, and I'm excited to see, hopefully, that she continues in the broader universe in some way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and overall, I just thought that this was really a fantastic episode as far as like setting up the identity questions that Clone Force 99 is going to have to deal with now, and the relationship questions they're all going to have to deal with, and how they're going to have to sort of define who they are individually in the universe. What sort of identity questions in episode 5 did you guys see that really come to the surface, and which ones would you like to see them explore more in the series? Starting with you, John.
Well, I think the identity thing that I'd like to know is more like I was saying with Hunter, is the whole idea of, you know, what he considers his role and how far they're going to take it. Because, you know, with the whole, it seems like the main focus is let's take care of these clones and everything. And it's like, okay, well, once you hit that area, then are you, if they're still around, then do they see a higher goal of keeping going against the Empire? As they see that evil growing and stuff. But to me, my goal, my biggest question with the resolving is going to start with them. It's going to be, you know, what is their role? Or is it mission over if they rescue these clones and then they all live happily ever after on Pabu, and then farm or whatever they do then. But
yeah,
I don't know.
That's a good point.
I mean, we know clones like to retire and go fishing. So
yes, haha.
Mm-hmm. So you know, maybe that could be their thing. They'll be kind of like that halfway point for whatever clones they find, to kind of help them have like a jumping point from the island to whatever life will be next for them. Mm-hmm. You never know. It'll be like a little rehab center for clones coming out of the war.
Yes.
That's shelter well. Them.
Yeah, yes. Because I get, you know, like Crosshair doesn't know what life is like without being a good soldier. Those two mm-hmm. young clones from the prior episode, you know, they're like, well, what do we do now? You know, so it's like, yeah, they all have to figure out. And, you know, I guess Pabu is a good place to at least start. But
yeah, as my sister says, there's always the universal clone desire to fish. which makes sense because they came from a water planet, so what else is there to do when they're bored?
That's true.
That's a good point though that you mentioned, John, about how there's also the whole the young clones that we saw in what, episode 3 of this season, I believe. I think it was episode 3. Yeah, with, you know, they showed up and they don't know anything else. So it's really interesting, the intersection between the clones' like fighting capabilities and how when you take away on why how when we take away on screen the clones' fighting capabilities, there's this huge identity crisis they experience. Mm-hmm. And the biggest way I saw that really explored in this episode was Crosshair's hand. You know, he's yes. having to deal with this new handicap, whatever it is. Maybe it's a sign of something worse. Maybe it's just nervousness, but we don't really know at this point. But the most important, the most interesting thing I found is how he reacts to it and how it's sort of a window into how Crosshair views himself. What did you guys think about his reaction to his difficulties with his hand and how it how it's a way we can see the way clones have issues?
I mean, to me, I took it very much as a sign of PTSD for him, because I'll be curious to see how he is in the next episode. Because in this episode, he had to get over and work through, and he still does, the bad things he said he did. And so his shooting has been what's caused that. He has taken innocent life and he knows it now. And so whenever he tries to shoot and be what he was trained to be, it's a point of, you know, trouble. So he gets the problem in his hand, as if his body is physically telling him, using this skill of yours caused innocent death. And so it's triggering a physical reaction. And so it'll be, you know, did it get better through this as he ended up saving Hunter and doing things? I think there was, you could see some improvement. But I'll be curious to see next episode if he's still dealing with that, or anytime he's in a situation where he's going to have innocent life in the crosshairs. Is this going to be, you know, a trigger for him?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, because the thing is, when you're looking at like the prior episode when they're escaping, and then this episode too, when you've got to do certain things, there is no innocent life involved. You know, he's protecting Omega, or, you know, trying to escape with her and stuff. So it's easier. And without that action, you can't really see is his hand trembling like it is when he's actually setting up as a sniper. So it's like, he seems, when the action's full blown and he knows his mission, he's fine, it seems like. But then, yeah, if he's got time to think, then something's creeping into his mind. Maybe it's, yeah, causing that issue. Because we haven't heard anything in the past where we, have we, where he injured his hand at all, or? Because he's wearing a glove on it too and stuff. So, yeah. So, or did they do something on testing with him?
Yeah.
No, we don't know that either. But, but like, it could be more along the lines that Catherine's saying, though, with the PTSD idea.
You know, we also brought him back to the point of his conversion.
Mm-hmm.
And so here he is having to face it. You have that vulture, which surprisingly lands. Which, you know, is kind of,
yeah, there's, you know, some there's some symbolism there for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get more into symbolism on birds on another show, coming up. So, hey, teaser there.
There you go. Make sure to tune in to the Secrets of Sacred Art right here on StarQuest.
But yeah, so there's some very strong symbolism with that. The ice vulture, whatever you want to call it. And then this is going to sound really crazy. I'm just going to have to put it out there now.
Go for it.
Last week, I thought, okay, Crosshair like the prodigal son. No. Crosshair like St. Paul.
Ooh.
Okay, so St. Paul, citizen of the empire.
Oh, man. Right?
And also, St. Paul, well-trained. Just like Crosshair, well-trained. Also, St. Paul was believing always he was doing what was right. He was defending God and him doing what's right. Later on, he's hunting down people of the way. This is the way. But anyway.
Both a Pharisee of them, among Pharisees, Crosshair. Right?
Both of them blinded.
That's interesting.
Right? Both blinded
by
the light.
Oh my goodness, the blinding. Yeah.
Okay. Converted and then had the help of one person to help them in their conversion. Mm-hmm. So St. Paul, after he was blinded, he had the one person who was like reluctantly, okay, I'm going to help you see. Crosshair has this one clone who helped him to see what was really going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Both isolated after their conversion. St. Paul took time by himself before he went to Peter. Crosshair, time by himself before he went to Hunter. And then, not easily trusted when they came into the fold. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then St. Paul still knew the Old Testament was true. Crosshair is given his old armor, which is still true. Boom. There you go.
Wow. That was intense. I was not prepared for Crosshair to biblical typology, but we got a biblical typology reference in Star Wars. That is amazing.
All the things I thought about when I was supposed to be focusing at mass, going, I'm really trying to focus, Lord.
Oh, goodness. Father's homily clearly was not that not that interesting, but
no,
we did get this
really
amazing
good
homily.
It was really good. It made me think about this stuff.
Oh, man. That was amazing. I've never even considered that angle on Crosshair before, but that is so interesting.
And then I can tie it all into one of the best books I ever read, Quo Vadis. I think I said that right. Written by the Polish author, Henryk Zenkiewicz. I think back in the 1800s was when he wrote this. Incredible book. It's about Peter and Paul in Rome during the time of Nero, burning everything down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a side character in there, and her name is Lygia. And she has a big hulk of a bodyguard named Ursus. And it's like Omega and Wrecker. The thing is, it's like, but if you start thinking about Hunter as St. Peter and Crosshair as St. Paul, it's like, oh, snap, one gets beheaded, one gets crucified upside down.
Yeah, where does this end?
And then everything ends up on fire. It's like, oh, no, what's going to happen? Man.
Yeah, that's a good point, that ending point there. One thing going back to Crosshair's hand, because this was something that I found really interesting, that both of you guys went to the mental explanation for Crosshair. The first thing that came to my mind when I saw Crosshair's hand is this is early onset Parkinson's.
Oh.
That was the first thing that came to my mind. And the reason why that came to my mind is both like medical testing on clones and how we saw so many of them clearly experiencing like some sort of physical distress in the facility. And the clones were put through accelerated aging.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I've been thinking about constantly with Bad Batch is these clones are going to be like rapidly reaching the point of like early like difficult like or early like late life aging difficulties. If they're, I mean, these guys are clearly like in their, I mean, they're clearly in their like late 30s. I'm sure in this, in the context of this episode, like as far as their physical like capabilities are, and some of them were, I mean, what Bad Batch is Bad Batch generation one clones, like from, you know, they're like, they're not no, generation they're not, one.
I don't think they're generation one.
Okay.
I think they're just after, but still. Yeah.
Yeah. They're early on. They're getting up there. And you know, that was the one thing that I started to think about where it's like, are these clones like literally just aging? Like, is this part of it? Are we seeing the effects of their accelerated growth and the fact that they've been, you know, unethically created in, you know, in a lab environment and used as, you know, human fodder when it comes to their creation? Like,
I hope they splice
that was the first thing
with,
I thought of.
I hope they splice them with a, you know, something like a Galapagos tortoise, because
oh
they
boy,
mature,
yeah.
they mature, and then the only thing that'll kill them is not old age, but like a predator or disease. So they'll like, hit maturity and then they just stay.
There's a Jurassic Park crossover in here that we didn't know we needed. Crosshair X Velociraptors, X St. Paul, the most ambitious crossover the world has ever known right here on StarQuest.
Hey, they did use a Jurassic Park scene with priming the pump.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. We are getting deep cuts. I'm not just throwing darts
at the wall here, guys.
These are some deep cuts. Yeah. Yeah. For real. Speaking of aging out and like abandonment, one thing that I found interesting in this episode was not just that the Imperial base just abandoned Imperials just abandoned the facility after it served as for it's served its purpose, excuse me, of just storing their loot. But also that the only surviving, like, I guess, human element in the base were the helmets of the, you know, of the dead clones. And I just found that really interesting as far as its impact on the batch, how they're going to be seeing that. Did you guys find that really interesting, or find anything significant about that sort of theme in this particular episode?
Well, I mean, I thought it helped Hunter see the softer side of Crosshair and understanding there is a lot more complexity, you know, because he stood behind and then Crosshair laid, you know, those helmets out. And I was trying to remember back in that episode, his partner who died in the, did he do the same kind of thing with that, with those helmets and stuff as a memory? So he was, you know, going back and doing what then that, you know, his friend had done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I thought that was good. And then, you know, obviously, if we're talking PTSD, that would definitely bring back those memories for Crosshair to see, you know, his friend's helmet and then those of the others and stuff, and then how they were just discarded, and remembering how he was just discarded, or how they were going to discard them as well because they were just clones at the end of that other.
Yeah, let him have a little corporal work of mercy there, and like burying the dead almost, you know, it gave him a chance to redeem himself, to know that these guys matter. I mean, he knew it then when he tried to rescue him. So now it was one of the things where it's nice to see that they gave Crosshair so many redemption opportunities. You know, I made this mistake. How can I fix it? I made this mistake. How can I fix it? So it's like he's undoing everything that was all twisted up, knotted in him.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked how this episode was a clear example of visual storytelling. And I really like how they relied on symbolism elements rather than it would, like, for example, it would have been out of character for Crosshair and Hunter to both, you know, wax poetic in some emotional dialogue to, you know, express their feelings and express their difficulties. Instead, we got this very like this very sort of grim soldierly this sort of grim soldierly depiction of reconciliation between the two of them, where they're sort of standing shoulder to shoulder doing something. The scene with Mayday's helmet, I thought was the name of the clone, by the way. Yeah. Mayday. The scene with his helmet was a really good example of that, because like for the first time, Hunter sees just an inkling of what happened here. And I was worried actually when I first saw that scene that Hunter thought that Crosshair had killed those clones, because he didn't have any context for what happened. So I was worried that Crosshair was there like, yeah, I had killed all these clones. And I'm remembering that. Which I don't know if that was how we were supposed to take, you know, what happened. But thinking of things from Hunter's perspective, it was almost like he was having to break himself out of the narrative that he had sort of built up to help him process what happened with Crosshair and how he abandoned how Crosshair abandoned Hunter, and that whole the founding inter-character like breaking point of the whole show, really. I mean, that's like season one, episode two is when we like, you know, boom, we break up our core team. And now we are showing basically the two sides of the Empire at this point, which is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminds me a lot about how in, and I know some of you don't like the sequel trilogy out there, but this quote's cool. We don't care. We like it all here. When the oft-repeated line from the sequel trilogy of "Let the past die" from Kylo Ren, I thought was particularly poignant here in several ways. Obviously, the past dying is a big theme in The Bad Batch, where our main crew is the past. They are the past. They are from the previous. They're from the previous era, as it were, and there's now a new era that's trying to take over. But in this episode, that particular phrase came to mind in how Crosshair is going to have to forge a new reality for himself. He's not just going to be a gun. He has to be a brother now. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, whenever I see the Eyes Vulture, I think of something dying because it's a vulture. And the thing I thought that died in this episode was Crosshair's pride. I don't know if you guys also had ideas with like what died necessarily in this episode, but that was the big thing that came to mind. Did you think that something in particular like died in this episode, Catherine?
I didn't really have that feeling. No, like it felt more like you could see how the wounds were being healed, that sort of thing. Even to the point of Crosshair and, you know, switching roles with Hunter, because yeah. Crosshair in working with Batcher got to be a tracker.
That's a good point.
Because yeah. He says, we'll track you. So it was pretty neat just to see, mm-hmm. you know, a shared role there. And yeah. Again, made me think about St. Paul and St. Peter, you know, that shared role. So I don't know who the mm-hmm. Gentiles are in this that, you know, Crosshair will convert, but that'll
probably
be awesome.
Probably the other clones. Probably the clones that sided with the Empire, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what's going to happen?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I was thinking, one thought I had with the dying was the idea that maybe, especially at the end of the episode when you see it, that maybe at that point, when you see the vulture, at that point is when Crosshair's attachment to the Empire and as a soldier for the Empire is officially kind of dead mm-hmm. at that point. Because, you know, he has that discussion later on with Hunter about the mistakes and stuff. And then you know, at that point, he's like, okay, I'm not perfect. You know, or Hunter saying, you know, we all have our issues. And I think at that point, he's ready to move on to say, okay, he is true, you know, truly now with the Batch and his brothers again and sister, that, and no longer just a good soldier for the Empire. I mean, he obviously had taken those turns in the past, you know, where he stood up to them, but now I think it's, you know, he's looking for his new identity officially. More so knows he's not attached to that anymore.
What do you guys think that new identity is going to be in this season?
I think he's just embracing being a brother. I think for the first time, because as a, you know, as the sniper that he was isolated. He was alone. I mean, he was even, you know, teaching Omega about the importance of it, you know, and patience. I was so happy he said patience. I was patience, like, oh, I said that.
Yes.
So it's like, yeah, but then, you know, knowing someone's watching you. So it's like, okay, now he's getting that knowing someone's watching you is also knowing that someone's watching to learn from you. And so he's got Omega there watching to learn. I loved how she called it out and said little brother to him. That was awesome.
That
and to see him smirk and take it like, okay, I get you, sister.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was good.
That's one thing I love so much about Bad Batch. That's why I love watching it and discussing it with my sister, particularly, because we have this really cool relationship between Omega and the rest of the Batch, where she's their little sister. You know, technically she's big sister, but in a way she is kind of big sister to them. But the thing I love the most is how she can still find that relationship with Crosshair. You know, he's kind of the hard person to, you know, break through to. But from the very beginning, she was like, you don't have to do this. I know what you're going to do, and you do not have to do this. Force sensitive Omega, who knows? But good little sister Omega, we all know. And the answer is yes. We've been... Something that just came to me now, we've been talking a lot about how, I mean, we've spent pretty much the whole episode discussing how Crosshair has been affected by this whole incident. But I'm also quite interested in how Hunter was able to experience healing from this too. Did you guys have any like particular scenes that spring to your mind when you think about how Hunter experienced healing over the course of this episode?
Well, I think, you know, you were saying that you felt the Crosshair's pride died as part of this episode, but I think that's also what happened to Hunter, because, you know, he's the prideful leader of the group. He's been there the whole time and all that kind of stuff. And then Crosshair comes back in it and he sees that he has an attachment with Omega. And he sees something in him that he's not seeing because of their past experiences and stuff. And I think, you know, that whole experience, I think when he let go of his pride and, you know, like two brothers going at it, a lot of times get into arguments because of their pride. And when they both let their pride go more so, then he could see the benefits that Crosshair had. And Crosshair called him out saying, look, I tried to help you guys and you're the one that got her in trouble, you know, and I'm the one that had to help rescue her with all this stuff, even though she pretty much rescued him. But, you know, that was the whole thing too. It's like, you know, calling him out. And then I think Hunter, you know, realized he wasn't, you know, he had his issues too. And it's not all just Crosshair's fault. So I think probably that argument helped a lot with that at that point.
Yeah. I mean, having Hunter see Crosshair put the troopers' helmets back up in order on the shelf in a respectful way, I think started, you know, chipping away at, you know, what's going on here. And then having Crosshair, like you said, John, just confront him point blank. It's like, I told you not to do this, and here you are. And that's why she got in trouble. So it's neat just to see that. I think Hunter is learning that as a family, they're going to need to work together, share roles, which they ended up doing, which was good. I love the fact that when they were arguing face to face, and then they show, you know, Hunter make his fist, and it's like, okay, they're getting ready to go come to blows, which is, I have two brothers, I've seen them do this. And so it was very much, okay, a family thing. But the music, when I watched it with surround sound, because you have the moment of the perimeter coming down also, why they're arguing, there's this building yes. tension. But watching it in surround sound, you hear this low chime, like the bell is tolling. This is it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the point of, you're going to fix this situation or you're going to die, kind of thing. And then to have mm-hmm. them then work together, resolve. And then the best moment for me was after the perimeter's back on and they're both sitting there in the snow with their helmets off and they look at each other and do, guys being dudes, head nod, we're good.
Yes.
You know, that's all this needed. It was like, awesome.
The guys being dudes, head nod, the universal sign of reconciliation. I'm sure that that was the head nod that St. Paul got in heaven. Jesus looks at him and is like, nod. Dude. Yeah. Okay. Do you know that? The perimeter coming down. Now that's a poignant sign right there. You know, the perimeter coming down as these guys are finally letting their real feelings out and their real, you know, their real anger and just pent up frustration with each other. I think that it was really, you know, one thing I thought about with this episode is we could have gone to another planet, like some undiscovered world, you know. And we could have gotten the same feeling. We could have, or not. I actually don't believe that we couldn't have gotten the same feeling. Thought I was trying to express was the fact that we came back somewhere to a very emotionally and symbolically rich place in the Bad Batch sort of history to do this reconciliation episode and this reconciliation scene was so effective. And that was the reason why I think this worked instead of going to somewhere new. And the other reason, obviously, that it worked was because we expressed it in a way that was authentic to these characters instead of forcing a contrived reconciliation scene in a way that doesn't actually mesh with who these people are and who we know them to be. So there were many symbols that were so rich coming out of this episode that we just could not have gotten if we had gone to, you know, a Joe Jungle World with some other big monster. I mean, the monster's not that important. Come on, it's an ice worm. You know, it's like we don't care about the monster.
Worm with a Y.
Worm with a Y. Requisite Y worm. I still salty about the Dune 2 thing. But we won't talk about that. That's for another series of StarQuest. Burying the hatchet. Let's talk about that. The end scene where Crosshair and Hunter are both carrying shovels. So they're leaving the planet. I think we all know what they were burying. The helmets, I assume, or any remains.
I didn't think they were burying anything. I thought they were digging the ship out.
You thought they were digging the ship out? I totally read this as burying the hatchet, like burying the remains of the clones as well.
No, because the ship had sunk into the worm trail, and yeah. So I thought that was just digging the ship out. When you said burying the hatchet, I'm like, what? And I had to rewatch it again. I'm like, I'm not seeing it.
Oh, man. Maybe I'm just having some sort of, like, you know, symbolic, you know, I'm trying to to make this too spiritual or something. But when I saw them both carrying shovels, I'm like, oh, of course, this is like the end conclusion. They're burying the hatchet in the form of they are paying their respects to the the remains of the dead clones by burying their helmets. So that was what I like immediately thought of when I see them both walking out with shovels. But that might just be me being too symbolically oriented on this episode.
I mean, I love it. It's awesome. I hadn't thought about it, but I also thought, well, are they just burying the base to cover their tracks too, so no one knows they were there?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because you know what was interesting is if they abandoned the base, why was the perimeter left on?
Question. I'm like,
why not shut it off? Why? I mean, are they planning on coming back for this stuff?
Just eat it, you know? Why not let the worm just take it all away? They don't care. That is a good point. Why keep the base?
I don't know if someone's going to end up back there.
Well, I was going to say, too, what I wondered is, you know, if, you know, Hemlock and all these people are, you know, trying to find them, and if a base that's supposed to be dead all of a sudden comes back online, you know, it's like, who's come, you know, somebody obviously went there. Or it's going to be something that I think they would check out, at least, and stuff, because, you know, it's, and then I don't know if they could track a data pad being plugged in or anything like that, but it's just kind of because they know that Omega has an LSA's data pad still, or there's a chance she still might have it. But so, and again, too, with Crosshair's past experience there, you would think they would like to put a lot of that stuff together and maybe try to figure out where to find them. I don't know, at least keep on their tail.
Oh, the Wi-Fi signal for Batcher 6 just connect. No, just kidding. Well, we know
I was worried
now.
When they plugged that in. You know, I was afraid something was going to ping somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's, they had to have set something off. Like, there's no way that they plug into an abandoned Imperial facility and they don't set something off. That's totally, totally makes sense, John, that they're gonna find them through this somehow. That you don't do that and get away with it.
And then I did get so happy when I got the big Wrecker hug.
Yes, big Wrecker hug.
Yeah. Like, yay, I was waiting for that. It's got to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then too, I like the, you know, Omega didn't play too big a role in this one. I mean, she was trying to help out, you know, the reconciliation zone. But you could also see her concern at the end when Echo sees that she has this concern that she could have done more to help the clones. And she's disappointed by what they find, you know, on the data pad isn't the, you know, the coordinates to Tantus. But Echo, you know, even though she is a lot more mature for her age and stuff, Echo does say, hey, you did all you could and you did exactly what you're supposed to do. You got out of there. And, you know, so he gives her hope that, okay, she wishes she could have done more, but at least, you know, she's still out there being able to fight and help, you know, help go back there still. But he, you know, so there is still the child side of her that they all still have to help out too. So it was nice though seeing him, you know, help comfort her because she obviously was still distressed that she didn't get all the information she was hoping.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't thought a whole lot about how Omega growing up is going to shape this episode, because it definitely shaped the season is what I'm trying to say. It definitely shaped season two, with Omega sort of taking a greater role on the team. She can do things and she is going to do things, and everyone else has to sort of recognize that she's not just baggage. But I haven't thought about how maybe we're going to see a little bit more of a recognition that Omega is still a kid in this. And, you know, she experienced all of this terrible, you know, the imprisonment, the terrible scenes inside of Tantus. And, you know, she's not like the Batch. She's not the same as all these other guys. And that may become more clear as the season unfolds.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting in Omega's story that we didn't get to see her with her friend on Pabu.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, it wasn't necessary for this part of the story. And I was glad they mentioned them as far as like bringing them food and stuff like that. But, you know, at some point in time, I'd love to see her, you know, see her friend again, a little conversation with the guys and what's the mayor's name again?
Oh, I don't remember. It's been so long since I've seen the Pabu episode. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to remember the names.
I don't remember. But anyway, yeah. So it's like, yeah. And then, of course, I really hope we get to see Fee again, but I don't know if we will.
Of course we are. She showed up in the trailer. So. It's a requirement. Okay, they good. They have to do it.
I know. It's like, I want to see her again and just the whole interaction. So.
Yeah, how do you think they get the sick like mobile gun platform that they show in the trailer? That's gotta be Fee. This is a good episode for many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
That reconciliation theme is a good one.
Some great visuals.
Yes.
In this. And especially when the fence went down and you see that last little whoop on the lights.
Mm-hmm.
And then the camera just moves forward just a little. And, oh, you just get that dread of, oh, something's coming. Yes. And I love that. That was awesome.
That was
the whole
amazing time.
I was like, wait a minute. I don't remember any creatures. I thought there were just raiders. Is this going to be the raiders coming? Okay. You know, no. But he said they're all gone. So,
yeah. That was amazing. Let me think here. I had a thought. One thing, I literally wrote it down as I was watching the episode. When Crosshair sights in to his scope, it is shaking visibly. And that is different than all of the other times we've seen Crosshair sight into his scope. And I thought that was such a subtle detail that just shows how much attention they paid to this episode's like whole symbolism. For sure. But
yeah,
that was a big one for me.
And just using AZ to help him with target practice. Oh my gosh. It was like, you know, him with his little 3D video game and telling him, oh, you're only, 53% accurate today? Like, wow. Harsh.
Well, also when you're talking about that perimeter going down, that was also, or not the perimeter, but the perimeter itself. When Hunter asked him, how do you know all the raiders are gone? And, you know, then he's assuming Crosshair killed them all. And especially with his answer. And that didn't really help at that point. You know, his suspicion, you know, it wasn't until then the next, you know, later on that with the helmets that maybe he did begin to see a softer side. But because Crosshair wasn't being as open at that point as he was later. Well, until they had it out.
As we're approaching the end, I did want to ask you guys for your predictions. We're at our third away point through, and I want to hear what your guys' predictions are as far as the direction of what's going to happen in the rest of the show. Who's going to live? Who's going to die? Who are we going to see? That sort of thing. John, you first. What have you got?
I don't know. I'm kind of all over the board with it. I mean, you're going to see, obviously, you know, you mentioned Fee and stuff, and I don't know what's going to happen, because I hope, you know, we'll see some resolution with Omega and she'll survive throughout this. I'm afraid, though, the Bad Batch themselves might not make it out. And it's just, this is still early on in Project Necromancer, or whatever it is that they're calling it. And obviously, later on, they go towards winning M counts with Grogu and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, it makes you feel that the side of looking at Omega and the clones and stuff maybe didn't pan out. So maybe she's still out there. Either she got away and they had to go to another way. You know, maybe that's what that's why they start looking at Grogu and other options. I don't know. I'm afraid that she's going to make it out. A lot of the Bad Batch, though, aren't. And I don't know. There's us, like I said, the dread in the back of my mind is, you know, since, like you said, you don't see them further. But, you know, I don't see them jumping on a space whale and going to a whole other galaxy.
Okay, John, make fun of my prediction last time.
No, I'm just saying.
Orgills in Bad Batch is the most nuclear prediction ever.
Well, I agree. That would be great, but I just, you know, the problem I have, though, is, like, I just hope, like, you know, we don't lose taboo. I don't know, was it Ryan or somebody else said that, you know, like if it gets taken out.
I hope they don't nuke Pabu. If they I'm losing my mind. I'm quitting the show. No, just kidding.
We need one planet untouched by the Empire, please.
One planet, just one. What about you, Catherine? Any predictions outside of nuclear space whales? Oh, John, did you have something?
No, that's fine. I mean, like I said, it's hard to come up with because they've already gone. Actually, they've done so much already with the story. And it's like, how much, you know, if they pack that much into 5 episodes, how much are they going to pack in?
I know. Got 10 episodes left. And it feels like we've seen a whole, like, season.
Yeah. I don't know. If it follows the whole St. Paul parallel thing there, I hate to say it, but Hunter and Crosshair are not going to make it past this. You know, they're going to go down fighting, I'm afraid. I hope Mount Tantus goes up in flames like Rome with. I'd love it if Nero is in there, you know, the emperor, but we know that doesn't happen. That man somehow survives everything. But I feel like if anyone survives to stay with Omega, it's Wrecker.
Yeah.
And I would love to see those two continue on somewhere. Maybe Fee will say, hey, you know, we're going to go off and do our adventure thing so that somehow Omega can survive. But I think it might just only be Omega and Wrecker in the end. And Batcher. Yeah. Good dog. She's a good dog.
Good dog.
Good dog.
Doggo surviving is required. Yes. Or else PETA will sue Disney. Just kidding. Oh, man. I'll just describe a scene that I really want to see. I want to see Tarkin orbitally bombard Tantus with Hemlock in it. I want to see that happen. Which would be amazing, because the reason why I think it would be amazing is because the Empire getting advanced knowledge somehow that this is going to happen. And rather than dealing with all the fallout, they are going to destroy Tantus. I think that would be the most epic, like, drive it home, this is who's in charge moment of the whole series. I do not know if the Batch makes it out of Tantus alive. But goodness sakes, that would be an amazing scene. It would be it'd be like the inverse of the Kamino, the Kamino orbital bombardment, you know, because in this moment, it's like the Empire hates what it's doing, but it's doing it anyways, and it's not in control, but it's going to act like it's in control by destroying its own facility, that sort of thing. I think if that scene makes it in somehow, it would be incredible. The other thing I want to see: what on earth is going to happen with Ventress? I have not read Dark Disciple. I have to before, like, I honestly maybe need to start it. But I know that there are events that happen in Dark Disciple that would impact the storyline of Ventress, and that they have been very clear they're going to not retcon the book in any way. They're going to honor the content of the book as being part of the story. But that they're also going to tell a story with Ventress in it. So I'm not sure how that works, just full disclosure, but who knows who Ventress ends up fighting, you know? I don't know what's in the tubes, also with Necromancer. What's in the tubes? If they canonize Starkiller somehow, I'm going to lose my mind. Starkiller, for those who don't know, is a character from Star Wars The Force Unleashed. And he's like the OG version of this whole, like, trying to clone a Jedi thing. They already tried that, and it's already, like, we already have that. Fans of Star Wars The Force Unleashed know we already have that.
Crazy Joris Seaboth.
Joris Eboth?
Seaboth.
Oh, yeah. In, yes.
The most insane clone of a Jedi you could have.
Yes. Yeah. But anyways, until next time, we're gonna leave it here for season 3 episode 5. But before we leave it here, be sure to subscribe Yes. To the show in Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, or the StarQuest Production Network YouTube channel. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe and all that good stuff, because it helps StarQuest Production Network grow and it benefits all of the shows that you know and love. To find previous episodes of Secrets of Star Wars and to send feedback, please visit sqpn.com/Star Wars. You can email us at starwars@sqpn.com or follow StarQuest on social media at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia or on Twitter. We do have to change that in the script. X at SQPN, or join our Discord community at sqpn.com/discord, where you can vote on what new nickname I should have. Oh gosh, am I really starting this? No. You can engage with our lovely community on Discord, which is very vibrant and very respectful, might I add. And we'll be back next time, though, where we'll be discussing episodes 6 and 7 of The Bad Batch. Until then, Catherine, thank you for joining me and sharing the secrets of Star Wars.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
And John, thank you as well.
Thank you. I had a great time.
And once again, I'm Ryan Nafziger, a.k.a. The Pod Racer. And I want to thank you for listening to the secrets of Star Wars right here on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, The Secrets of Star Trek. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/StarTrek.